irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back for another week of the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. Boy, you know, it's getting harder and harder to get that band thrown out of the studio, isn't it? Those guys won't quit.
Yeah, they like to be in here with us.
Yeah, well, I am your host, Richard Polinelli, and Jim Christina has decided to take the week off. He won a ridiculous amount of money on Rich Strike on Saturday, and now he doesn't have to work. So he is at home in Idaho, and he is listening in. However, don't panic, because at the controls of my co-pilot seat is the talented Bobby Jean Bell down in Albuquerque. Miss Bobby Jean, how are you this morning, this evening, rather?
Oh, I'm great. I always look forward to what I call my Thursday radio day, because I'm involved in radio, like from when I get up to when I go to bed.
Yeah, you
and I always enjoy the writer's block. Yeah.
Yeah. Real quick, a bit of news before we get to our guest. I was scheduled to be at the Montrose Book Fair this Saturday from 10 to 4. But thanks to a nice little return visit from COVID, I'm not going to be going down there. Fortunately, it's mild, but the doctor and I agree it's probably a good idea to just avoid people. But if you're in the Four Corners area Saturday morning from 10 to 4 in the afternoon, there are a bunch of authors who are going to be down there. Please drop in to the Montrose Center for the Arts in downtown Montrose. Go check them out. Go talk to them. They'd love to meet you. I will try to catch up with everybody next year. That's, you know, what are you going to do? In the meantime, we do have a guest this week, and I am going to read her bio real quick, if my computer will, cooperate. She is an Army veteran, a journalist, a public speaker, and an award-winning author. She's originally from Missouri and joined the Iowa Army National Guard at the age of 17, receiving a degree in journalism and international studies at the University of Iowa. Her first book was an International Next Generation Indie Book Award winner. And she is joining us tonight to talk about her latest book, which is Beyond Sacrifice. And it was a very interesting read, and I am looking forward to talking to her about it. So let us welcome to the show, Alicia Dill. Welcome to the show, Alicia.
Thank you so much for having me. Such an honor. Thanks. I'm listening to these and past episodes as well, so I'm excited for tonight.
Well, we usually have a pretty good time, and the hour goes rather quickly. We will try not to be too crazy with Jim not around, but you know, no promises. Alicia, why don't you tell us a little bit about your book? Because I found it to be very interesting. Did not expect some of the things that happened, so I'm kind of interested to see how you put that story together. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so it's actually my second book, and I always tell stories about female veterans as the main character, and so that's really what to expect from me. But in this book, it's Concepcion Chapa, who is an FBI agent, an Army veteran, and she is blackmailed by the CIA to go and kill for her country. And so that is pretty much a log line summary of what happens. And there's something that, you know, that's the plot-ish type of thing, but really the story is more of a character journey that says, okay, what is her idea about service? And the title even, you know, is like, you know, what's enough? You know, when am I giving enough for my country. And so they find the right hook, and that doesn't give too much away, but they find something that's enough for her to say, to continue on that journey and that kind of blackmail issue. But I believe that that the actual plot gets you there and makes you excited, but really what you're in is in the first person view of an assassin. And mm-hmm. So other comps have been for Jack Reacher, which and kind of like James Bond, and I was like, really? I didn't get that. But then I thought maybe what they mean is that that's more of the plot piece. And then what I tried to do was say, if you did this job and you were in those moments, what would it actually be like? Meaning a protagonist and an antagonist. There's no good or bad. It just is. And the gray is what she operates in.
Right. So, you know, I didn't get a Bond or a Reacher feel from it, but what I did the day after I got done reading it, it dawned on me there was more of a Jason Bourne type feel to it, yeah. Where you had a person who used to come into this CIA operated world. The difference being with Bourne, they kind of deconstructed him on the inside. They didn't do the changes, the physical changes for him to slip into the life he did. With Concepcion, it was different. They completely changed how she looked. I don't know that they did so much of the rewiring on the internal as much as they did with Jason Bourne. But that was, you know, if you're going to ask me what it's similar to, I would be more of a Bourne than I would be a Bond.
So I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, but actually I have a mentor, and if you look at the screenplay, which is, I'm in the Writers Guild in Los Angeles Veterans Group, and the Bourne aspect was something that was a comp for me to look at when I was looking at that at Beyond Sacrifice as a more of a screenplay. And so I started looking at the intro scenes of what that looked like. Like, and when you read it, it's totally different than when you watch it, because it's just so fast and you're like, cool, 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 right? But yeah, so I'm glad you picked up on that.
Yeah, it definitely had the Bourne feel. The similarity struck me as they both, the characters have a moment where they reach the breaking point. You know, right. With Bourne, we see it right off the bat, because his breaking point happens, you know, if you've watched the films, right? I mean, he has no idea who he is anymore. He doesn't even know he's been an assassin. He didn't know who he was before, and where the journey is finding that out. With her, with your character, with Concepcion, she gets to a certain point after certain amount of missions where it catches up with her, and she has a breaking point. And that, for me, was what drew me to the book the most, was getting inside the assassin's head and seeing how much is too much. You know, at what point does the human finally say, I can't do this? And I thought you developed that, and you kind of showed us how she dealt with it really well.
And I think that, you know, the idea about changing your looks was something, like with technology today, that was something that was really important to me. I actually started writing this book in 2009, and it's, you know, I was always fascinated with South American culture and plastic surgery and all of it. But what happened over time is our culture with AI, if you go to an airport, they can scan your face and they have it, you know. And so why did they want to erase her? Why did they want to change the bone structure and all of it? And a lot of people think about plastic surgery as this positive thing. But if you look at it, changing your whole identity, like truly as your culture and all of those things, like that's a negative. And that also affects your mental health and all that other stuff. So there's a lot that I don't want to totally give it all away, but that's the deeper journey. And if you want to talk about your character journey and what it is and the intimacy of first person narrative and all of that, which is what I write in, that's, you know, some of the things.
Well, when Ludlum wrote Bourne, that was back in the 60s, I think. You know, they didn't have anything like we have now. I mean, you didn't have to do too much, you know, a change of hair color or put on a pair of glasses and you're good.
Right.
So, yeah, nowadays, no, you can't even do that anymore. Bobby, I am sure you're ready to jump in here with a whole boatload of questions. So let her rip.
Since, you know, I watched some of those films that you're talking about, but they're little misty moments in my mind. So I came to this book really without other than reading, I think, The Jackal, which I remember being absolutely transfixed with many years ago. This to me was, I was coming to it as a fresh page without really thinking a lot about these great points that you're coming up with. I always, as a reader, I like to identify that title. And as I read, I'm thinking always, oh, how does this connect to the title? And Beyond Sacrifice, just even, I don't think it's a spoiler alert because it's really early in the book, but you have, I think it's almost the opening line, is a freshly minted assassin. I understood the risks my mother had to take. And I think, okay, this is Beyond Sacrifice. I would imagine that a lot of characters are going to give us examples of various levels of sacrifice. And I think that theme for me just rolled through the book. And there were some important characters in the very beginning that I kind of lost track of. And this afternoon, I sort of went back to the beginning, and there's like a major character in the beginning that plays a major role at the end, and which I will not give away. But I was like, oh, those aha moments, sometimes they come to me on a second read through.
Yeah.
I think I would like you to talk, you have talked a little bit about her, but she is a fascinating character, and she has a wonderful friend, Joelle, and I would love it if you take a moment and just talk about these two characters without giving away, you know, how they met, kind of where their friendship grew from, maybe, because I thought it was a really special relationship those two women have.
Absolutely. And I feel like I know these two characters so well because Joelle is the first character in my first book, Squared Away. So what I did was 2009, I wrote one huge book because I know nothing about nothing. And then I realized they were two very different stories, but they were almost like, I won't say the light and the dark, but they definitely complemented each other's weaknesses against each other. Because I've always loved Wally Lamb, and Wally Lamb wrote, I Know This Much Is True. And I love that he could write a book within a book. And so Joelle and Concepcion, as battle buddies in the Army, just like I had battle buddies in the Army, you have to help each other. You're accountable to each other. And so Joelle is family, beyond, bigger than, I have four sisters. So, and one of my sisters is still serving. And there's something in that where an Army sister, it's not even like you tell each other the truth. You will do anything for each other. You, it's just like that band of brothers thing. It's like band of sisters. Okay. There's, you don't pick each other. You are that for each other. And so for Joelle, it's like that bond is there with Concepcion. You only see Joelle as like that other, the other mirror to her. We went very deep and Squared Away, but Joelle in Beyond Sacrifice is there to represent the absence of family in Concepcion's life, because you have to drain Concepcion of everything that is family. And the only thing like family for her is Joelle at that point. And so Joelle is in that. She has sisters, she has this big family, and she goes to a going away ceremony. Actually, that ceremony did happen. My sister was deployed a couple of years ago. So when I was writing that scene, there was a trueness to that where there was a line where the commander says, you bring them all back safe. And I was in that going away ceremony, but I was the family and my sister was going.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a pretty big moment.
Mm-hmm. And she plays a role throughout the book, even though she's, because Concepcion or Sophia, we have a name change as she takes on that new identity. She just stays in her mind, in her heart, in her soul, connected to Joelle, even though Joelle isn't really participating, except that she's with her every moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to hop in here real quick and take a break. So just everybody kind of lean back for a second, and we are going to listen to this word from Tuscany Bay Books. Hey, everybody. Richard Polinelli from Tuscany Bay Books here. And if you're an author and you've just finished your manuscript, you just got the easy part done. There is editing, formatting, cover creation, marketing. The list goes on and on. But don't panic, because we're here. And we can do all of that for you so that you can focus on the most important thing, writing your next book. And if you're a reader looking for your next great read, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. We have books for the kids. We have mysteries. We have thrillers. We have westerns. And we have some of the best science fiction being written by award-winning science fiction authors who will tell you an entertaining story, not send you to your therapist with message fiction. So again, readers and writers, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com and get ready to set sail on your next great adventure.
Yep, and in fact, we have in the last 2 weeks had three brand new releases that are off and running and doing really well. We have a book of poetry by Rob Jones that is just, I just sit back and look at the sales numbers and go, I didn't see that coming, but we are very happy that a lot of people are reading that and enjoying it. We just recently took over Declan Finn's St. Tommy NYPD series and re-released that. And the first book in the re-release just became the number one new release on Amazon for Christian fantasy.
Whoa!
Did not see that one coming, but we are again very happy. And then both Rob and I and Declan are just trouncing my new release, Gatelin's Blade, but that's okay. We're doing well with that one as well. So a lot of new reads for readers out there. So go to TuscanyBayBooks.com and check those books out. We're back here on the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. We have Alicia Dill as our guest. And if you would like to talk to her or ask her a question, please call in at 323-203-0815. And you can ask her a question. You can ask Bobby Jean a question. You can ask me a question. Whatever you want to do, just give us a call at that number and we will get you on. Now, let's go back to Beyond Sacrifice. And I think when we left, we were talking about the characters in the book. And my favorite character is going to be Charles.
That's the James Bond guy.
I did not see that man's story arc at all. You know, so where did Charles come from? Because I can kind of figure out where, you know, Sophia came from, a little bit about your army background. But where did Charles come from?
So Charles came from this idea. I mean, first of all, when I was in the military, I served with 33 different nations when I was in Kosovo. So actually, you know, on a NATO mission, and we had, you know, every country that you could think of is there and supporting that. So whenever I write books, I always have that international thought with me. I always want to think about the soldiers I served with, and even beyond that mission. I mean, we always think about, you know, we're really big here about, you know, service in the military in the U.S., but it gets boring to just talk about this. I mean, I'm sorry, but like, as much as I'm like, yay, I mean, we need to talk about the other types. I mean, I serve with all these different countries, their soldiers, and I got to know the different personalities and, you know, a lot of my friends all over the world. And so I felt like Charles could actually be really from anywhere. And I think that what draws Concepcion and Charles together, whether their art comes in, there's always this hidden nature that he could be a professional and you'll see, you know, how all that is, but all of them have to keep hiding. There's always this thing where, who are you in your core that everyone's trying to be erased, right? And it's almost like the mission is always first, but you know, and just like some higher level themes here, even with coming back to the what is enough, I always start my books with for the soldiers, for the people that are doing these jobs, not just soldiers, but you've built a lot, you know, you've served your country, you've given all of this. Remember to live it. You've already sacrificed so much. Make sure that you live it, right? And I do a better way of describing that. But all I'm saying is for the people that I meet, they always want to go back. they always feel like they haven't done enough. And you probably meet that with police officers or, you know, nurses or all of it. They just want to keep going back in the emergency room. They want to keep giving and giving and giving. And you have to say, hey, you have to live. Stop. Like, there's a life here too. And like, so Charles hides, but then he also is this bridge for her because she doesn't. And he also, you know, lies and does all the other stuff, but is it for her benefit? And then you'll realize, you know, just by going through it, you know, yeah, he was an important character to me. So.
So is there going to be, I know Bobby, I'll jump to you here in just a second, but usually I can tell if there's going to be a sequel or not when I get done with the book. Are we going to see Sophia and Charles and Joelle in another book or, you know, how have you got that mapped out?
So I think she's a little bit in it, but I actually have Lala's story, which is Joelle's little sister, who is a police officer and Louis. And so I think that these characters exist in the world, and that's really important. And when I started writing these characters, I just was like, I don't see female veterans represented authentically in fiction. Like, they're not as, they're almost too perfect. They're either too, you know, stylized, or they're not written by female veterans. You can tell that. I mean, just like, you're scared. You're also like pumping yourself up in those moments. You're also ice cold too. You're also able to lock it in. And I have this conversations with my sister, like, hey, lock it in, embrace the suck. We can do this, always ready. I mean, we have those mantras. And so I don't think I saw that in a lot of fiction. And so now that they're out in the world, they operate in the world, in my world. And so I would love to see more of that. That being said, I mean, we'll see. So,
yeah. Go ahead, Bobby.
Well, I was just going to say, when you were talking before about live the life, you know, live it. There are moments that were really joyful in this book where she, like, she's dancing. She meets the neighbor that was sort of nosy and wasn't very trusting of her. And then they create such a special relationship over food. Oh, those ladies knew how to eat wonderful food.
Miss Mendoza.
Yeah. And we see that she's, Ms. Mendoza is also a dance teacher. And so Sophia attends dancing. And then later on in the book, dancing, she continues to dance. In fact, you have a line that she says, even maybe just to herself, that she has to dance to live. I mean, I have it here, but it may be a paraphrase. But that's really, you know, until we have that, we see some outlets. She loves to shop. She's got really good taste. She enjoyed that. Also goes along with developing a new persona and having to, you know, and then you're always on the run, so you're always sort of replacing the things that that you need. But the dancing, how did you, she's not playing golf or tennis. I mean, she's dancing. How did you come across dance as her outlet?
So, well, I knew like where she was going to kind of end up, because there is a thread there on Squared Away, and dancing was actually something that the internationals would do in Kosovo. So you could actually attend that there's a class, that class exists. It's in Kosovo, and all the internationals are there doing salsa. So that's a real true thing. But the dance part ended up being bigger because she can't go back. So as you said, she is becoming what she is. And that's where people struggle once they've done all of those terrible, horrible things, is they try to go back to who they were. They can't go back. So they have to be in the now. So Miss Mendoza opened something up that was a connection to someone she used to be, but she has to embrace the new. And so there is that, and the dancing becomes much bigger in her life. So it's almost like, this is her and this is how it needs to be. Dancing is something visual. I also think you can an assassin that's dancing her heart out. I also love that she's ice cold. She goes and takes a guy out, and then she's listening to Paulo Coelho on a book on CD.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and she goes to the bookstore and she buys every book.
Correct. And she's also told to not, like, do that, because I'm in bookstores all the time, right, because I'm an author. And the bookstore people, like, those are my people. But she's like, he's like, don't look at those books. And so she's like, I'm going to look at those books. Right. I feel like it's in those tiny details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we can, let's kind of shift gears to the writing process. And a question I wanted to ask you, because I looked at your, I don't know if your resume is the right word here, but you are also served as a journalist.
Yes.
And I don't know which publication you wrote for that wasn't in there. Yeah. But being somebody who has a 20-year newspaper career in my folder, I wanted to ask you, what differences did you notice when you switched from writing for newspapers or for magazines and started going to fiction? What, you know, what was that transition like for you, and what changes did you have to make in your writing style?
So first of all, I joined the Army as what's called a public affairs specialist, which is a print journalist. So we mm-hmm. did magazine journalism, but also it's the Army story, not the actual story. But then when I got out, I worked for 3 years at small time publications in Iowa. And then I worked for Lee Enterprises, like Iowa Farmer Today, Missouri Farmer Today, and then the Midwest Marketer. So I would take pictures of cows, and that was our cover. And then I talked to the coolest, you know, farmers. So I went from soldiers to farmers, and I would do in the end up stories like how the nursing shortage is affecting rural America. And it was amazing because I really felt like I went from the best of our country, like soldiers and farmers. And then I'd also be like, and then the corn yield is this, right? And it was during the 2008 crisis for 3 years. It was one of the toughest. For every county, Iowa County, 10 farm families were failing, and it was just the hardest time. So what the difference was for was, but then you have to pick out the parts that are interesting to your audience that really get to the heart of it. So what would happen is you always have to be right down the middle. And I was lucky that I worked for something like Iowa Farmer Today, where I didn't have an agenda and I didn't have a farm. I come from Missouri and my family has farms, but they weren't on like one side or the other. They weren't big ag and they weren't small, you know, or active in any way in that sense. So what would happen is I would get calls on both sides, and you have to, like, I didn't like that, or I didn't like that. So that was okay. But then I'd get people crying because mm-hmm. the issues would be so hitting so close to home. Like, and you, like that thing I said about the failing farms. And it just shows you that when it's real, it matters so much more and it touches so much more. But the details have to ring true. So as a novelist, I always knew that, yes, it's fiction. But to me, that's why I write about female veterans. Like, I always have to try to get close. So I do a ton of research, and then I'll, you know, blow it out of the water with the plot. But if the detail could ring true, that was important to me.
Do you find yourself drawing on people that you encountered during your time working for those magazines or those newspapers, and using them, you know, not you know, blatant copy, but you're using aspects of them in your characters?
I would say yes, but I would more in the military side. I haven't delved as deep. Maybe my third novel will, because it'll be set in rural America, but more just like the character details. What I will say is the Miss Mendoza character. I used to do the Iowa Farm Cook feature, where I would sit in women's kitchens. I was so lucky. They were the best cooks, and they would be nominated. I would just do that for free, just like, just hang out. I would drive to like Pella, and they would be Dutch letters. I would drive to Decorah, and it would be like Norwegian lefse. I mean, okay. So yes.
Yeah.
Yes, please. Okay. And so Miss Mendoza coming in and critiquing. And the thing of it is, food unites you immediately. Mm-hmm. You can get past anything. So they create this bond through food. Mm-hmm. And you're pouring your heart out with these people you just met because they made you a home cooked meal and you just drove and I didn't have air conditioning in my Jeep. So I'm like sweating it out to get to the middle of nowhere where GPS doesn't go on this farm. And you get there and they're like, we got a piece of pie for you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, thank you so much.
Yeah, Iowa in the summer is hot and humid. And oh my God, I lived in eastern Nebraska for a couple of years. And yeah, you lose weight just walking out the door. You've sweated off 5 pounds. We need to take a quick break and get our next commercial advertisement in. So why don't we do that right now? Let's pause and hear from LA Talk Radio.
So you want to be a radio talk show host, huh? Well, why don't you get off your butt and do just that? You see, at LA Talk Radio, we've got slots available all day long, Saturdays and Sundays included. They're 50-minute increments, so all you have to do is go to latalkradio.com, click on the link that says Become a Host, follow the easy-to-follow instructions, and Mr. Sam Hassan will be more than delighted to walk you through everything you need to do to get your own radio show started, up and running worldwide with a podcast to follow. That's very easy to do. LATalkRadio.com. Let them help you get your dream alive. LA Talk Radio, you've got something to say. Now let's hear it.
Okay, we talk radio, oddly enough. We are talking with our guest, Alicia Dill, and we are talking about her writing process. So the question we usually ask quite a lot is, are you a plotter or are you a pantser when it comes to getting your books ready? So which one is it?
Okay, so I'm a pantser. You probably got that. But I am a reformed pantser because now that I've looked into screenplays, I'm learning to beat it out. And like that's something that, you know, before I think I would create moments of, okay, I need this moment. And that's really what beats are. And so I will say that I get it. I can do the homework of the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is still really critical to have the surprise. I never want to follow I understand the formula and I get that, but I still want to make sure that that it's something like different to me. Otherwise, what did I do this for? Like it has to be there. Again, I read so much though, and so if I've already figured it out by chapter two, I'm like, oh man, you know, I just bought this and I'm already done.
So. Yeah, that's a sinking feeling when you're in the second chapter. I have a first chapter test. If you haven't hooked me and I haven't figured out how it's going to end by the end of the first, then you know we're done.
Yeah.
But you know, you brought up screenplays, and that's. It reminded me of my experience with this. My first book has been adapted to a screenplay, and there's people bouncing around. This thing's been going for 2 years. I told them, just whenever you make up your mind, call me. I'm not sit here and wait. A story, but you need to do this, this, and this. And it was basically just taking three scenes and reordering them. And I looked at it, and I rewrote the screenplay the way he wanted it. And it dawned on me, that was a heck of a lot better book had I written it this way than the way I did, you know. So it's for when I tell people this story, it's you need to be open to learning that, yeah, it looked good that way, but there's other people who can take a look at it and see what you can't see because you're too close. And you make the changes. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're doing with screenplays. You're understanding, I like to do it that way, but this way may be a little bit better.
Yeah, it's, well, there, we talked about that I've done like public affairs relation type of writing. I've done, you know, speech writing and journalism, mainly journalism, but this is a whole new medium and you need to treat it as such. No one's ever going to read what you do. But these characters exist in the world. And when I go to female veteran conferences and they say, when is this going to be a movie or a TV or something? And you look at them and they're like, this is a lot to them because they feel themselves in these characters. It's almost just like they're in the world. But what someone from a movie or a TV executive would care about is totally different than what, if this is, they're not going to have the first person voice you know, in a screenplay, that's exposition. So there's no one telling you what to do.
Right.
So then you're like, oh my gosh, what would be in that world that would be important to them? Thus the Jason Bourne thing where it was like, and then you have to turn it three times within the first 5 minutes, or then that's not a thrill. And you're like, okay, like there's a whole thing here. Right. So I think you just have to take every medium for itself. So don't try to think that you're going to do the thing you already did and that's what it will be. And that's probably why a lot of people struggle, including me, to just say, like, you have to, just because I'm a pantser here doesn't mean I can't totally step back and do something different.
Yeah, it's a transition to go from, you know, journalism to fiction writing to screenplay writing. They all have their little things that need to be met. And I hear, you know, I hear writers all the time like, well, you know, that's not how we did it here. Well, you know, guess what? You're not there. You're here. It's different. You know, if you want to succeed, make an adjustment. If you don't want to succeed, by all means, keep going your way and you won't. But, you know, it's a tough business and you gotta be flexible enough to make the changes you need to make. Let's see. I think you time. Bobby, why don't you ask?
Well, and I'm expecting an interesting answer since she started this book in 2009. On this show, there's only one question we ask always of every guest every week, and it's about writer's block. Do you get it? Do you not get it? What do you think of it? If you get it, how do you get around it, over it, under it? Talk to us about writer's block.
Yeah. I think
you gave our interviewees block there, Bobby.
Yeah. I want to answer it, you know, with importance. And I think that I have to almost think back to the 2009. I'll say that the first thing I ever wrote, I wrote my first draft on a notebook because I wasn't sure what I was doing. And I wasn't trying to write a novel. I was just saying, what if I could? And I wrote, what am I doing here? And that was the first line of my first book. And I made sure it was, which was squared away. And it ended up her being in Iraq. Like, what am I doing here as a soldier? But what happens when I got writer's block was really that I didn't know what I was doing, which is critical. And you say, you know, you go through the dark night of the soul. Like, should I be doing this? But when it actually comes to writing, no. When and I say that because I have taken, you know, the Iowa Writers Workshop Summer Festival, like the Iowa Writers Workshop, the gravitas of all writing here is like 20 minutes from me. It's amazing. And so I get them and I've taken these courses where they teach you called fast writing. So even if it's just that you set a timer for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and you just let it flow, what's okay, but you do sit down and you do let that happen. So if you want to write about grandma and in the kitchen and like she's arguing with grandpa about whether it's a can of beans or a bag of beans, right? Like whatever it is, that's what you're going to write about. Mm-hmm. And then you come away with it. So that's never been hard for me. Putting it together, structuring it, plotting it, it definitely has. But the block part, I guess, because I was in the military and we don't even have editors. You might be the only one that does your job in the military. There's no way. It's called make it bleed. Like if you get an editor, you're so happy. You're like, thank you. This is going to make me look better. Like this is going to be amazing. Thank you so much. This isn't personal. This is work. I got to go carry an M16 and I got to get this story out. So there is no like, oh, I'm going to have an artistic moment here and it's all special and perfect. None of that's ever going to happen. Your deadline's due and you're going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. But the block, the artist thing, it just has never factored in for me. Makes sense.
It does. And most journalists I found, the journalists that we've had on who have gone on to do fiction writing, have a similar response, I think, is that we don't get it. When we're writing, we don't get writer's block. And it comes from our profession. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have writer's block.
And make right? a deadline.
If you got writer's block, you got to go find a new job. And they brought somebody in who didn't have writer's block. So you you don't have that luxury almost of saying, well, you know, I'm just not feeling it tonight. Well, too bad. Get over there and write. You know, that's.
Yes.
I'm surprised, though, that they didn't have anybody in the military looking at your stuff. They just out the door.
So, well, what they would do, if what you are trained to do is not have an editor. I mean, the information school pass if you can't get through without an editor. So it's not everybody that has the ASVAB score of all of it can get through it. So it's a very small group that gets through. And it's kind of like, if you can't pass without an editor, because you might be on a ship and there might be only one of you, they're expensive. Why would they, you're given what? You could be on the radio, you could be in the Armed Forces Network, but you're there for morale or public affairs if something happens. But in a way, like that idea, I did have some people that were editors, but the people that were above me never did my job. So you're like, can you look at this? And they're like, I don't know. So you're like, okay, great. Thanks. Okay. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Bobby. Yeah.
Just, I guess, as a follow-up, I was thinking, were there, when you're writing like this book, were there secrets, were there things you wanted to write, but you couldn't, or you had to rephrase, or you had, you know, was there any security issues you had to be conscious of? And did you pass this through some beta readers? You know, did you have some people reading it along the way to give you feedback?
So that's a really good question. Everything I wrote about is publicly known information. In fact, that Argentina, the report that they did is true. That thing is out on the CIA.gov. But no, because I know that just even from my undergrad degree, I have a couple of master's degree, but I wanted to make sure that anything I pulled could actually be researched as a journalist in me. Right. But it was they actually declassified that in 2017. So that when CHOP is reading what her parents did, that's a true thing that actually happened. Those were the notes, and you can read them, because I wanted that.
Editors in your books.
No, because, by the way, we're a small group, and okay. Those editors are still the ones that are so excited about my books.
Okay.
That when I see them all in uniform, they know my secrets, and they know when I forget the articles, and I have they know my real issues, right? Your editors are your best friends. Like, they're the best. So
I've got two that have died very horrible deaths in my book. So, but then I was doing it for over 20 years. So there's a few of them that had it coming. Let's switch gears real quick if we can. As a reader, when you're reading a book, what are you looking for when you pick up a book and go to page one and start reading? What are you looking for?
Well, I actually read a lot of international thrillers. That's usually what I'm into. So I read a lot of, like, just because there's so many and I read so much that it's kind of like too much, right? But every single day, every single night, international, like Scandinavian thrillers. I read Andrea Camilleri, like the Inspector Montalbano series, or like even Asia Pac series of like detectives or police officers in those regions. Cause I want to be in a place that I've never been. I want to go to that place through their eyes, and I want to solve crimes and be in those things and, you know, do the things I want to do. And that's why I know when I wrote these characters that they don't exist in that market, because I'm like, what? Or that the characters are too, like, I always liked Harry Hole by Joe Nesbo, because it was like, this guy is so believable if you've ever worked in different groups, because he's never, I mean, there's a lot of mental illness in like the, if you're in the high, okay, like that's where I'm at.
So Bobby Jean, when you pick up a thriller of any, you know, international, American, whatever the case may be, what are you looking for from the author? Keep you turning the pages?
I'm looking for exotic locations. It could even be in the States, but that I don't know, that I haven't, you know, been to. I love the extra details of music, food, wine, all of those kinds of pieces, because I want to be immersed in the experience. I recognize that sometimes in thrillers, we may not have a whole lot of really good people. These are these are people operating in a way that is not in my norm. I can't pass judgments. I have no experience. So sometimes it may take me a little while. I may say, gosh, none of these characters have any redeeming value. And then I trust, as I've said before, I trust the author. And I trust the author. And I just say, you know, I just haven't read enough and things will be revealed to me. And I'm going to trust the guide that's taking me through. And, yep. And I definitely felt that with this book too, that these are complex characters. These are not cardboard stereotypes that we maybe experience watching TV or watching film. These are very complex people. And then I really felt privileged to be able to enter their world and experience, not just through her eyes, but we experience the other characters kind of through her eyes. And so I found it a very enjoyable read. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, what I like in my villains, I like a villain that's just bad. I mean, the guy is just going to go out there and blow up the world because he just wants to. And then you've got your main character who's got to overcome all this and stop him. But oddly enough, my favorite villain of all time was in a film, The Rock. And the general who takes over Alcatraz Island, because he is doing what he's doing, not for an evil intention. He's trying to do what's right for the men he lost when his country betrayed him and them. So there was, to me, that was the kind of a complex villain that you don't see a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't evil. He was just a good man who had made a decision to go down a dark path. And those kind of characters, you know, that's what you want to develop as a writer, is whether they're good or bad that the reader can connect to. And that's what I want when I open a book. You know, the story, the plot, the action, that's great. But give me a reason to care about these people, mm-hmm. good, bad, or otherwise. I want a reason to, if the bad guy dies, I want to have reason to cheer. Okay, good. He got stopped. If the good guy wins, all right. Or if he's battered and bruised, you feel bad for him. So to me, that's an important thing for writers to do, is focus on your character development and don't make them two-dimensional, because mm-hmm. you'll lose me with a two-dimensional character in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Bobby Jean, anything real quick before we get ready to call it a night?
No, I have nothing.
Aren't we just efficient tonight? Alicia, thank you for being on. Why don't you tell us real quick where folks can find you online and keep up on what's coming up next for you?
Absolutely. Thank you. So I have a website, aliciadill.com. So it's aliciadill.com. And then also all my links are there. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of that. There's also links to how you can buy the book on any place books are sold that's on there. So it's always, you know, your choice. Circuit Breaker Books is my publisher and they have links there too. But that's all good. And that's usually where I'm at on Twitter and Instagram. So
excellent. Awesome. Excellent. Well, thank you again for being on and putting up with us for this, this show and for this hour. We're looking forward to hearing more about Joelle and Sophia and Charles and the gang and seeing what they're up to in the future. In the meantime, we have plowed right through another show for the week. That's the minutes fly by here. So I guess it is time for us to wrap this thing up. On behalf of our guest, Alicia Dill, the book, again, is Beyond Sacrifice. And for Bobby Jean Bell and Jim Bell, who I think is in the kitchen.
Yes.
Is he cooking? He's cooking.
Yes.
We'll have to see if he can measure up to Miss Mendoza. For Jim, Christina, and the bookie, without whom this show is absolutely impossible, Jerry, Christina, Jim and Jerry, hope you guys are enjoying that third gin and tonic. You better be. And for myself, Richard Polinelli, and our wonderful owner and engineer back in Los Angeles, manning the booth in the 49th floor of the LA Talk Radio building, Sam Hassan, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.